www.mediaplay.tvpodcastnetwork.
You're about to sign on to a lifelong sentence, my friend.
Hey.
Everybody, this is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210. Today's episode is Season 8, Episode 28, Skin Deep. You okay? That was one of our hosts,
nope.
Sarah D. Bunting with Tara Ariano. Here we go.
This one is so rough, you guys. So rough. Hello.
Also, it's Episode 28 and like, don't Brandon and Kelly still have to like get engaged and then almost get married and then break up at their wedding? Like,
yes.
When is this shit going to start happening?
I know. Spoiler question mark.
No one cares anymore. It's fine.
No, it's true. Reminder, you can buy an ad on this podcast. $50 for a personal message, $100 for a commercial message. Go to previously.tv/ads for more information. Let's go. Starting with our B plot, Donna tries to save a stylist from self-harm. So we start this plot line at the only modeling agency in town. I assume it's right next to the only restaurant in town.
Uh-huh.
Where Donna is supervising a catalog shoot for her fashions. LOL. OL. 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 A stylist whose name we're about to learn is Monica knocks a bunch of items off a rack and Donna races over to tell her to be careful because they're the only ones she has and they can't get dirty. And Monica's very skittish and apologetic, and Donna's just as frantic bossing her over to get coffee, and she's so intense that even Noah tells Donna that she bit Monica's head off, and Donna feels bad and agrees. And then we see that Monica went straight into the open bathroom at her place of work to pull out, I guess it's an art blade or a utility blade, I don't know, one of those little canvas cutter things.
Matting cutter, yeah.
Yeah. And cuts herself on the arm and we see the blood is like a 100% paint. Like, it's so bright. I'm not in any way trying to, in this plot line, in the way we're discussing it, try to minimize how serious self-harm is. Obviously very serious, but equally as obviously, show is not equipped to handle it or portray it properly or take it seriously.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not sure how we're expected to react when apparently Monica's last name is Smucker because the older cuts look like raspberry jelly. It's not okay.
Mm-mm.
So would you say in regards to how you approach this, you're in quite the jam?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
I'll let myself out.
This plot line really never gels. I'm sorry.
I don't know what you're expecting.
That's a thinker.
Oh no, I'm sorry.
We all really need to get out.
That wasn't intentional, but I'll take it.
That's good. That's really good.
That was horrible and wonderful.
Guys, don't cut yourselves. Donna apologizes through the door, but Monica smiles with relief and says she feels better now. And Donna apologizes some more. And then Monica comes out all creepy smiles and it's creepy. So after the shoot, Donna figures out that Monica has a crush on the himbo photographer who you can see in the visual aids. He's got like the longest, curliest backup, like Guns N' Roses cover bandy hair that you ever saw,
but it's like in progress, like he's trying to grow it out. It's like you know, Leo the stuntman on Bachelorette. By the time you listen to this, he may be gone, but he's still kicking around, I think, as of this recording. And it's like his like sophomore year hair when he just decided he was gonna make a go of it as the guy with long hair. Anyways,
this guy comes up and tells Monica, Donna tells Monica to ask him to see a reggae band at the Peach Pit After Dark later that week. Don't do that.
Speaking of LOL.
Honestly, Monica is shy and weird, and Donna encourages her to go for it. So when he comes over to say goodbye to Donna, Monica tries to ask him out, and he agrees so readily that it seems clear he's just trying to get out of the conversation and will beg off later. I mean, we later see what does happen with this, but even in that moment, I was like, yeah, he's not going to go.
No.
But anyway, Monica and Donna's celebration is cut short when Donna sees that there's blood on one of the dresses and pulls up Monica's sleeve to see all of her cuts. And Monica claims they're from her cat. Donna tells her to go see a doctor about them. And Monica keeps changing the subject to the shoot. And Donna keeps changing it back to dealing with her injuries. And it all is left very unresolved. So then later, Donna tells Kelly about Monica. And Kelly diagnoses her in clip two.
I could be wrong, but it sounds like this thing called cutting.
What's that?
Well, it's a disorder where people actually cut themselves. We have a pamphlet on it at the clinic, and I read an article in the New York Times.
Oh, well, if you have a pamphlet on it and you read an article, fuck you. Fuck you. I hate her so much.
I know. And I love how she starts with, I could be wrong. Like, you don't think you're wrong.
No, you don't think that. It's called cutting. What's that? It's when you cut yourself. Don't write these things. I'm going to cut myself. Oh, my God.
So that night,
sorry.
Donna finds the blade in Monica's kit, and Monica catches her finding it. And Donna, who, as far as we know, met this person yesterday, whispers that she knows what she's doing and wants to help her, which maybe she does want to help her. She definitely does not know what she's doing. And of course, Monica says she doesn't know what she's talking about and is right. And Donna forces the issue, and Monica asks if she was snooping through her stuff and tells her she has no right. And she feels violated, and Donna apologizes again. And then it's the next day, and the reggae show comes up again, but it's even worse than I guessed. In front of Monica, Joe invites the model to go with him instead, and Donna tries to comfort Monica, but she's pretty down on herself. And then she walks in on Monica putting, like, Neosporin or something on her cuts. Donna confronts her, saying she knows Monica's cutting herself. Monica doesn't want to talk about it, as she has made very clear already. Donna wants to understand why she does it, and Monica says all the things we've already heard in every bad TV movie about cutting ever, which, like, it's hard to remember, but this was, like, the golden age of cutting fictional storylines. There was that TV movie with Sean Young, too, around this time, I think.
Oh, yeah.
The golden age of cutting storylines.
Well, you know what I mean? Maybe not golden.
Stock prices for cutting were really high. People were dancing in the street.
Cutting
dogs
a rug.
And cats dancing together. Golden age of cutting.
And also, Monica's.
Dogs. Oh, God. We're going to hell.
So, Monica started doing it in college when she got a bad grade and got dumped by a letter on the same day. Donna says she has to stop. Monica has tried, but she can't. Donna, with all her expertise, says there are doctors and therapists, but that Monica has to want to stop, and cites her own pillhead past as proof she knows what she's talking about. Monica says even if she did quit, it wouldn't fix her life. And Donna and her 5 pounds of makeup say that looks don't mean anything. It's how you feel, and Monica's worth it. It's so bad. And then Donna's all worried that her catalog is full of 6-foot-tall models. Like, maybe the time to think about using a range of body types was A, before you finished the photo shoot, if not B, before you made your samples size 0. And Noah is an idiot in clip 3.
See, I don't compare myself to other guys in magazines. They're models.
Yeah, but women are totally different. We always compare ourselves. And now this thing with Monica is just making me realize how extreme it can get.
I hear what you're saying, but don't you think she's an unusual case?
Maybe. I'm just not sure I want to promote an unreal sense of beauty. And maybe this is my opportunity to make a difference.
I'm so mad, yet so unsurprised, that there's no attempt to interrogate or even identify Noah's privilege in this scene as a man. But also, Jesus, Donna, please do not try to make a difference. Just don't.
Well, and then there's, like, the meta privilege of Tori Spelling and the, like, failure to interrogate her disgustingly botched Cleavern plastic surgery that was clearly undertaken in response to societal expectations of lady actors, and especially perhaps under-talented ones who have their jobs as a result of nepotism. I mean,
it's hard to know.
Yeah. Also, enough with the fucking Saint Donna routine.
I know.
Please.
God. But sure enough, Donna does somehow book the studio again for a makeup shoot featuring I mean, making up for what was already shot, not a shoot of makeup, featuring non-models as her models, including Monica, who tells Donna she was right to be so nosy and pushy and unprofessional. I'm paraphrasing. End of storyline.
I scored some amazing scones.
Five ways Monica's life would have been better if she had an alternate jam name for her last name. I'll go first. Monica Welch.
Monica
Kraft.
Monica Full Maman.
Thank you. That was what I tried to think. Sorry.
Monica Hartley's for our UK listeners.
Mm-hmm.
Or Monica Storebrand.
That's all I had. I couldn't think of anything after you took Kraft. On to our A plot. Kelly is judgy about a sex shop and in general. Remember months? Everybody. He's back, presumably because this actor is someone's cousin or something, but officially because Muntz is getting married. And Brandon prats that marriage is becoming an epidemic, citing Andrea and Dylan, who are neither of them still married, so fuck off. But anyway, Muntz refuses to play along with Steve and Brandon's ball and chain narrative. And when he asks, they both say neither of them is about to get married. He also doesn't want a bachelor party, so Steve and Brandon start peer pressuring him into it. And then Kelly comes down to confront Brandon in front of Steve and Muntz about a Playpen magazine found in their room. Classic TV brand Playpen.
Oh.
So he says it's research, which doesn't work when people get caught with child pornography on their computers and probably won't work now, but it is for a real story. Guilty Pleasures, the first sex shop in Beverly Hills, is about to open. Justice for the Pleasure Hut, by the way. Not mentioned.
May I also add that if it is a fake spank mag that mm-hmm. Brandon had in his room, shouldn't it have been called Pint House? Come on. Yeah. Pint House. Okay.
Got it. A truly nauseating exchange ensues in clip four.
What, am I in trouble for reading it?
No. Just makes me feel a little weird finding it, that's all.
That's the way Guilty Pleasures neighbors feel. They don't want it in the neighborhood.
Well, I can't say that I disagree with them. I wouldn't want to walk past it every day either.
Maybe not, but they do have a legal right to be there.
It should have been called Rodeo Sextra.
Okay.
That's good. Yeah. Steve ends all our torment by telling Kelly about Muntz's engagement. She congratulates him before sliding the magazine toward him and saying she supposes he won't be buying those anymore. And he agrees that he should probably cancel his subscriptions, and then clutches it sadly. And it's almost funny, but it's stupid. Yeah. And then we're at the Beat office, which is chaotic with calls and faxes because Janet is not there. Steve sent her out to run errands, but admits to Brandon that it's because things have been awkward since their stupid reunion. And Brandon tells him to get over it, but Steve has never almost dated someone he works with before, possibly because he's never had a job before. And the end of that episode, by the way, was basically him making a declaration of interest, but now he's trying to angle Janet and doesn't know how to do it without fucking up their working relationship. Shut the fuck up, Steve. Make up your mind.
Seriously.
But at this point, Janet comes back. Brandon and Steve then resume talking about the bachelor party. Steve will be in charge of the stripper. Janet says they can get party favors at the sex shop, and Brandon was going to go anyway to cover it. And as the Beat's publisher, Steve feels a responsibility to join him. And Janet rolls past with a reference to Love Oil, and knowing she's okay with the existence of sex shops makes Steve interested in her again. Got it. And then Val and David talk about needing to go away together to jumpstart their sex life. She goes to take a shower, leaving a How to Jumpstart Your Sex Life article open, and David regards it quizzically. And then Kelly is having lunch with Aaron and Jackie, who says that on doctor's orders, it's the last salad she's going to have for a while. She's getting a facelift and won't be able to chew. And Kelly is like, you're kidding. And Jackie is like, clip five.
Honey, this is Beverly Hills. We never joke about plastic surgery.
Jackie for president.
We never joke about it either. Donna's cleavage is scary. Kelly says Jackie looks great, but Jackie had to pursue the facelift after she found out there was a discount for people over 40. Like, are people under 40 getting facelifts? I don't know. Maybe it's just people in their 40s as opposed to 50 and older. I have no idea.
Shouldn't Andrea go undercover on that story? Because
yeah,
she's right in the zone. And also, what? All right.
Yeah. So Jackie offers Aaron, who is a new Aaron, frozen yogurt. And Aaron specifically asks for the flavor that's non-fat. And Kelly decides she cares about female body image messaging this week, but doesn't quite nail it in clip six.
Aaron, I brought you some Rocky Road ice cream. Want me to make you a sundae without fudge sauce?
Ice cream's fattening.
You're so skinny.
Yogurt only has 80 calories, and I don't want to be a blob.
I don't know what Kelly thinks her point is, but she's making it in a very bad way. Like, but you're so skinny. That's not how you reassure someone if you're concerned that they're depriving themselves for bad reasons.
Yeah.
Also
she's seven. Like, learn how, hey, child psychology major, learn how that works. Like,
yeah.
Don't you want to do this other thing that you just said you wanted to do something else? Like that? No, that's not how 7-year-olds roll. Okay.
Also, we just had our last new Aaron, like, at the beginning of this season. I know it's hard to remember, but Carly was in this season, and the whole reason that Steve ever met her was because of Aaron being on the soccer team with Zach.
Yeah.
Like, did we already need another one this fast? Who cares?
Yeah. She's like the drummers in Spinal Tap.
So then Brandon and Kelly are walking out after a movie they loved, straight past a poster for The House of Yes, hearty, har, har, wink, because a co-star is Tori Spelling, if you don't know. But Kelly is distracted. Oh. What?
Nothing.
Oh. Kelly's distracted and has apparently waited until now to tell Brandon about Jackie and Aaron and their need to fulfill male fantasies. Like, what did they talk about on the drive over? But anyway, she makes him promise that when he's old and gray and distinguished and she's just old and gray, he'll still think she's sexy. And he says that will be easy. And when we see them next, Kelly is pontificating some more in clip 7.
There is no such thing as a small fantasy. It starts with dirty books and movies, and then it's strip clubs and plastic surgery.
You're taking this a little far, don't you think?
I just want to know that when you're with me, you're thinking about me.
This is ridiculous.
If it's so ridiculous, then why do you still have this?
It's research. I told you that.
Give me a break. Why do you really have it?
It's a guy thing, okay? It's no big deal. I got it when we weren't together. How's that?
Well, that makes it okay.
I don't know why you're making such a big thing out of this. It's just a magazine.
Then get rid of it.
Fine. Happy now?
It's a start.
You know, just because I threw that one away, it doesn't mean I can't buy another one.
Well, then rip off your dick and throw it in the toilet.
That makes me feel real good. Thank you.
I'm not trying to make you feel good, Kel. This is what I'm trying to tell you. This has got nothing to do with you.
I don't see it that way, Brandon.
I mean, like, whatever. People enjoying pornography while in a relationship, like, is fine, but the way he's being so defensive about it is what makes it gross. Like, why are you being so defiant? If you think it's okay, then don't act like this, weirdo.
Well, and if you think you have such a great point, try this on. The fact that it has nothing to do with her is her whole point.
Yeah.
Like, whatever. Like, I proofread Penthouse, and so I've, like, had all the weird discussions about this with my then boyfriend, and like, I don't know, everyone's different, and I just, once again, this show is like trying to be a feminist, I think it thinks it is.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, that's not really how any of this works. Like, you're totally on the wrong axis, the axes, yeah, for this argument. So it's like, why are we even bothering?
Also, her. Like,
yeah.
And, you know, like, it just makes no sense that all of a sudden she would be really down on sex. Like, this is not typical of her relationships.
And maybe he just wants now and then to jerk it to somebody with a full-size mouth. Sorry.
Perhaps. So Brandon and Steve bring Muntz and David to the store, which is being picketed by a bunch of local shitheads, one of whom Brandon interviews. And inside, the manager
Without getting her name, P.S.
Right, of course. Inside, the manager is a Mr. Eckersley, so I was wondering, Sarah, if you had comment on that.
He's a flamethrower. He'll put the fire out. He's the pitcher, not the catcher. That's it. I'm out.
Okay. He's also standing in the middle of the store blowing up an inflatable doll the morning of his grand opening. Like, maybe last night was the time, but anyway, he doesn't care about the protesters. Since they're free publicity, and Brandon then immediately gets out of his depth in clip 8.
A lot of people say that stores like this sell literature and products that objectify women. You got any comment on that?
Yeah, tell them to read the Constitution. As long as I'm not selling anything obscene, which I'm not, I'm covered by the First Amendment, which means I am free to sell my products. They're free to complain about it.
I mean, what?
Well, also, like, a lot of people are saying, nice journalisming, buddy. Yeah. Like, how about these protesters you can see outside are complaining about XYZ as opposed to, like, the imaginary people you made up?
This pamphlet that I picked up at the clinic claims.
So anyway, Muntz doesn't know what fur-lined handcuffs are for. David has a whole basket of stuff, including edible underwear. I doubt it. Steve is excited to report that Mr. Dennis Eckersley is going to buy ads in the Beat and give them a discount on anything they buy today. And
then Beat.
Brandon then goes back to the office to hand Janet a sexual harassment lawsuit in clip 9.
Do magazines like this make you uncomfortable?
No.
I mean, I don't mean to put you on the spot, but a lot of women say they feel bad about themselves when they look at this kind of stuff.
Ah, they're just pictures in magazines. Severely airbrushed pictures.
And what about the sex shop in Beverly Hills? You think it belongs there?
I'm probably not your target audience. My parents were hippies, so I was taught that sex was a good thing and a healthy thing. You know, I don't really have any hang-ups about it.
So it doesn't bother you?
No, not at all. If places like that help people express themselves sexually, I say go for it. Sex is a beautiful thing, with or without commitment.
You know, Janet, you and I may have more in common than we originally thought. A lot more.
Let's see. We went to a dance together.
Yes.
And I think you dumped me before the night was over.
Janet! Stupid Steve and his stupid tiny office boner. And then David is trying to show off the oyster oil from his guilty pleasures haul.
Oh.
He's all, it'll relax you. And Val asks if he thinks that she's tense, but she allows him to massage her back for 10 seconds. And then he busts out a wooden roller that I'm pretty sure is for feet. You can see it in the visual aids along
I
with her.
It might be for another area, but
Perhaps.
Well, it's like the when they show that, like, here's this vibrator, and then it's in Sky Mall, so they have to show them using it on their shoulders.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
That's not where that goes. Those are buddy ears. Come on.
Yeah. It does not get Val's motor running, is the point. And cut to a dumb fight between Brandon the idiot and Kelly the sex-negative prig in clip 10.
Oh, sorry. I was still grossed out about oyster oil.
Fair.
What do you think of my editorial?
So, you had the perfect opportunity to take a stand on pornography, and you didn't.
You know, Kel, once you start telling people where they can shop or what they can sell, you're getting on a pretty slippery slope. Before you know it, you're legislating what people can say and do.
Politics, schmaltics, Brandon. You think it's okay to read these magazines. Those centerfolds aren't real.
I never said they were.
Well, they aren't.
Fine. They're not. Are you happy now?
Are you saying that because you agree with me or because you want to avoid another argument?
You know, Kel, maybe I'm saying it because I'm tired of having my temperature taken on the subject every 10 minutes.
What about ethics? What about morals?
Cal, sometimes I like to go to a movie or read a magazine and not think too much. I don't think that's a crime, but apparently you do.
Wow. We fucking hate each other.
Yeah.
Break up.
This is the stupidest circular fight. Like, it's so dumb.
Yeah. Also, you're not reading that magazine.
Yeah, thank you. I keep saying that. Like, the next day, Val is getting ready to go to work when she sees the edible underwear in David's bag. And reading the room perfectly, he invites her to try them on, but she asks for a rain check because she's on her way to work. He suggests breakfast, but she has a lot to do and leaves David to jerk off, presumably. And then David later goes to the Walsh house to return a credit card that Val left at his house. What? Steve confesses that he went back to Guilty Pleasures alone and is embarrassed because he doesn't have a girlfriend. And they then tiresomely go back and forth about whether it's better to be in a relationship or not, which ends with David moping out, whining about whether dating Val is more trouble than it's worth. No one feels sorry for him. And Val later ends up back in the Walsh kitchen, where she is apparently the first to inform Kelly that all of the guys are at Munce's bachelor party and that it gave them all an excuse to go back to Guilty Pleasures. And she says she told David she wanted more romance and he went out and bought a bunch of toys. And Kelly is grossed out because I guess she remembers this week that David is her brother. And Jenny Garth can go scratch, but I feel very bad for Tiffany Amber Thiessen for her part in this exchange.
Yeah.
Clip 11.
I mean, it's not like I'm a prude or anything, but, you know, why couldn't we have gone together? I mean, it would have made it less
sleazy.
Yeah. Ugh. What do men want? Because I, for one, am baffled.
They just don't understand how that stuff makes us feel. The toys, magazines.
Oh, fat, inferior, completely horrible.
Left out. Like, we're okay for their daily lives, but when it comes to the fantasy part of things, we're somehow off limits.
Well, it's because it's their fantasy, not ours.
I don't want it to be mine either. I just wish that we could share it, you know?
Men.
They think we're the complicated species.
This is not how sexual fantasies work. Like,
no.
Is anyone in the writer's room from Earth? I'm legitimately asking. I just don't understand how this is the... Like, leaving aside the, like... Men are hilarious. Let's watch figure skating and shop. Kathy cartoon ack horse shit that is not funny. Piano trill to the contrary. Like, nothing that they're saying has any grounding in, like, anything.
No.
Human experience, science, having ever read a Penthouse letter. Like, come on, guys.
Ugh. Anyway, apparently this bachelor party is happening at lunchtime, and a very dumb misogynist conversation predictably ensues, which I will not repeat. The stripper shows up and strips, and Brandon
not before Brandon is really weirdly, like, smelling the queso. That'll be in the visual aids, and if someone could explain to me what the fuck, he's like looking along the surface of it and then, like, sighting down it. And then he hands it to Munce with a chip. Like, it's very weird. And I get that Priestley is trying to make his own fun and no doubt failing because season 8. But sure. Jesus Christ, what are you doing?
Oh my
Don't
God,
have
I
cheese
totally
dip
that.
At the stripper.
Yeah, gross. Maybe I blocked it. So Brandon pretends he wants to interview this woman and have a conversation with her like she's a person. But then she continues doing her job and he's like, forget it. Like... Fuck off. You know, like, he just decides, well, she must not have anything interesting to say. You know who doesn't have anything interesting to say? You. So apparently
some people
it's like
say that.
Apparently it's like the party's 10 hours long because when Brandon and his wide collar over blazer look end up back at Kelly's, she is in her robe. And he tries to rationalize not telling her about the party even happening, and she confirms that she doesn't approve and that she finds it disrespectful for a man to have one last night of fun before he commits to a woman. And Brandon claims it's a bonding ritual no different from a bridal shower, which, no, it's not really anything sexy about opening up an iron, but fine. Anyway.
You're doing it wrong, Tara.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm
also,
sorry.
There's a lot of sexy irons out there.
Jeremy Irons.
Kelly assumes there was a stripper, and Brandon will only say there was live entertainment and that it was harmless, which she says not to her. Brandon tries to win this argument and fails in clip 12.
You know, it occurs to me, when Dylan was getting married, we all sat around playing poker while you ladies went out to a female strip club.
That was not my idea.
The concept of bachelor parties isn't my idea. You know, you have been like a broken record the last few days. I am not responsible for all of mankind's attitudes towards women.
I'm not asking you to be.
Then what are you asking?
Brandon, maybe I've been a little harsh, okay? But in a typical ordinary week in Beverly Hills, I am running into women getting unnecessary plastic surgery, children dieting, and girls just out of college cutting themselves. I mean, it's just a little out of control.
I couldn't agree more.
And now you are giving me mixed signals, and it upsets me.
I don't even know what to say to you.
Brandon.
I'm not going to stand here and listen to you question my morals.
I just don't know where you stand.
Yeah, you do. You just don't agree with it.
That's right.
This conversation's over.
Yeah, it's been over. The last 14 times you had it. And also, what are you talking about again? What yeah. mixed signals? He doesn't care about your feelings. That signal is extremely clear, Kelly. Dump him, mm-hmm. preferably yep. out of a helicopter with no parachute. Hashtag yes, all Brandon's.
Yeah, but also slightly in his favor when he's like, hey, you and saw strippers. Her saying that wasn't my idea is not a good answer.
Yeah, that's true. Like, you did go.
Exactly. Like, if your whole thing is that this is a moral issue, like, then your moral objection should have stopped you from exploiting those gentlemen in their banana hammocks or whatever.
Well, and notice that her objection is that it makes her feel like she might be a little too fat, basically. Uh-huh. That's yeah. her objection. And it's like all projecting of shit that's going on in her own family, which just talk to him about that then.
Right.
It's definitely not like, let's, you know, let's explore and protect the, you know, the situation of sex workers and, I don't know, legalize it and make sure they have a union. Like, I mean, no, right. she doesn't care about them.
Right. But, and furthermore, like, there could have been a reasonable argument for her to make, or at least like a point, if she had told him what seeing Ross again, like, brought back up for her about, like, around sex and, you know, early situations that happened with her that changed her. But, like, she has not told him that because she doesn't respect him enough to let him in on, like, one of the worst things that ever happened in her life. And so instead it's all this, and it's like the writers have forgotten what happened last week. You know, like,
not to mention that she was a model raised by right. a model who right. was a substance abuser. Like, right. these things make a difference in how Kelly would see the world if she were a real person, which thank God she's not, because someone would have kicked her to death years right. ago. And that someone is Sarah D. Bunting.
We agree. So then Val comes out of her bathroom at the Welsh house in an elaborate teddy with like garters and shit and produces a bunch of toys, including a love leash and glow in the dark body glitter. But David asks if she's into all this stuff and is all weirded out, taking us all the way back to the series premiere when Marianne Moore wanted to fuck Brandon and he was like, I should be doing this, not you. At first he claims it's great, but then he puts everything back into the bag and says he has a lot to do tomorrow and he needs a good night's sleep and rejects her sexually, first of all, like a fucking idiot, and then stays to sleep in her bed and not fuck her. Like, not that anyone should be coerced into doing anything they don't want to do, regardless of sex, but at the same time, like, go home. Like, this is awkward. You don't live
yeah. there. And also, he's wearing, like, of course, because it's David, XXXXL flannel pajamas and mm-hmm. sleeping on the most hideous sheets. And he, like, curls up. He's like, yeah, I have a lot to do tomorrow, yawn, and then just curls up to go to sleep while she and her glorious breasts are still yep. standing there. And it's like, David, are you blind?
Right.
Do you have glaucoma? I really need to know. It's insane. You will see it in the visual aids and you'll really not understand it at all.
No. Again, no one feels sorry for you. So then Steve brings Janet a, as he always calls it, cappuccino. It's never learned to pronounce it right. No one ever corrects him.
Oh, God.
and a cranberry bagel, gross, and an apology for never having given them a chance. He thinks they should go out again, but she thinks he was right and they're not meant to be. She gave him a lot of chances. They didn't pan out. She likes working there. Why? And thinks they should keep it professional. And then he fucking tries, what about free love and sex without commitment? She says she's into it with the right person. Janet! Janet!
Burn.
And then Brandon states they're not allowing people to pay for their ads and trade anymore, which, duh, like maybe Janet could help health insurance if you didn't, just saying.
Oh, God.
But he won't go so far as to ban strippers from advertising in the classifieds, what. Val and David then go for a hike and talk over each other, apologizing about their recent sex issues. And apparently all of this goes back to David's anxiety about the magazine article about jumpstarting your love life. Val didn't even read because she was reading her horoscope. Wah wah. Then they have sex outside. And apparently, Brandon rewrote his editorial to placate Kelly.
Oh.
He has a firm grasp on the difference between fantasy and reality. And then Kelly comes out with a Kama Sutra kit from Guilty Pleasures. So what was her point? We still don't know. Fuck everybody. The end.
We did learn Val's in Aries. Yay, Aries.
Hey, that's true.
And
she looks super cute in her outdoor fucking braids.
Erotic iron brands. So,
oh, you have? Please share, Dave.
Oh, well, I just got as far as Steam Master, and then I thought too much time passed.
Not Frigidaire. Black and Dicker.
All right.
Brawn. let's name our episode MVP. Janet shutting Steve down so hard.
Yeah. Honorable mention to Tiffany Thiessen's plastic surgeon. Again, it's been a while.
Nothing for a sex shop manager, Dennis Eckersley.
No, although I will add this. Keith Hernandez, who, in addition to, you know, being Keith Hernandez, is one of the guys in the TV booth for Mets games, has this expression that, good fundies,
sure,
which stands for good fundamentals. Shout out to Roger Cormier, whose podcast is named Good Fundies.
Yes.
When I worked at a like Hallmark type store in the mall back in the day, we had a like mature section.
Oh,
it had a little velvet rope around it. It was just like cards and, you know, penis pasta and shit like that.
Sure.
But we sold a product called fundies, which were edible and crotchless, like, just skip the underpants. Like, do we really need the stage craft with all of this? Like, these don't seem fun. Or D's.
What's the point of them being edible if they're crotchless? Unless you mean they were, but those were two different varieties of fundy.
No.
Oh,
All one fundy. All the fun in one fundy. I was just like, yeah, just don't wear underpants. It just seems a lot more efficient. But I'm an Aries, and that's how we think. let's get on with this, shall we? I don't need a lot of straps and snacks.
When your edible underwear is creased and wrinkled, look no further than Cum Beam irons.
Oh, I would have gone with Sun Bum, but we'll also accept.
Well, I figured
there was also
blue,
secret cutting
navy
in this
blue.
Episode. Do you remember that, guys?
Vaguely. That was a long time ago. Speaking of being more efficient, too late. Least valuable player. Kelly giving feminists a bad name, and by not really being one, but really thinking she is.
There are a lot of options here, but because I forgot to mention this in the actual storyline, I'm going to say Donna for having a gazillion pounds of makeup on, thinking that she's qualified to diagnose somebody's self-harm issues, and suggesting when she's still pretending to buy the kitten story that the solution is to have the animal declawed. This is
the
solution. Ladies and germs, do not do this. It's extremely cruel.
Yep,
end of PSA.
Good point.
Thanks,
we have a user. What?
I said, thanks, Bob Barker.
Yeah.
We have a user-submitted challenge.
I scored some amazing stones.
At Kimberly Beverly L. Hudson on Twitter asks us to list 5 ways sending a character to live in Iris's treehouse would improve the episode. Well, maybe Monica could chill out and relax and not be so tense and self-critical that she feels like she needs to self-harm. Look at the horizon instead.
Jackie would not have access to plastic surgery, and also there basically would not be anyone else around. And also her and Iris spinoff.
Aaron could just eat lots of fresh fruit and not have to worry about calories probably very much at all.
Kelly would be spared the harsh judgments of society / being made anxious by the guilty pleasure hut.
I'm going to go ahead and guess that Iris doesn't have mail delivery at her treehouse, so Brandon could not get his issues of playpen sent there.
General erection. Brand Iris.
Good one, Dave.
You know, it's not too specialized. Just sort of like, you know, it's just sort of your baseline erotic iron.
Mm-hmm. Boneral electric. I might be too good at these. Next time on Again With This, Donna gets jealous. Again, a Bev Niner shouldn't have access to firearms. Again, Brandon tries to put a ring on it in desperation. Again, and the beat staff clash over a prospective hire named Sarah. This Sarah is going to have to insist on full medical and combat pay after peeping the visual aids for this and every other episode of Again With This. You can find those on our website at previously.tv. You can follow that website on Twitter at previouslytv. And you can follow this podcast at AWT90210. I'm henpecked editorial blue pencil Sarah D. Bunting, and I am on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is lifelong sentence Tara Ariano. She's on Twitter at Tara Ariano, and our producer only listens for the articles. He's David T. Cole. Talk to you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoonie.
Pause for ad. Also for burp. It's about to come. Just a second. There we go.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv Podcast Network.